battles and every soldier faces enemies. If you're saved, you're in a battle. If you don't recognize it, it's because you're not fighting. All right, the only way a Christian could not realize they're in a battle is if they're not fighting anything. You're just going with the tide, doing whatever everybody else is doing. Our battle is spiritual. All right, that's the blank on the page. Our battle is spiritual, and our enemy is the devil. That's one time, sometimes we forget who the real enemy is. The enemy, and understand what I'm saying, the enemy is not ISIS, but it's the spiritual darkness and power behind them. All right, any of these things, the news media is all focused on the human element and not the principalities, the powers, the spiritual wickedness in high places. And you and I as Christians need to have some discernment to recognize where the real enemy is. The enemy is simply using people as pawns, as puppets in his plan. And though they can be mean and nasty and destructive and everything else, we still have to realize that they're not the enemy, but the power behind them is. It is a spiritual enemy, and he is the devil. Since Satan cannot get our souls, he wants to destroy our influence and our effectiveness for Christ, as well as our fellowship with God. The Christian armor makes it possible for us to stand against the wiles of the devil. Without the Christian armor, we cannot stand. Without the Christian armor, we get blown to pieces. Without the Christian armor, we get mortally wounded. We've got to have that armor. Talking about the importance of it. To stand against the wiles of the devil. God knew exactly what parts of the body needed protected. We'll see that when we look at the different parts of the armor. But God knew what parts of the body needed protected and what Satan would try to attack. Each piece of armor is essential for the protection of the Christian. Every piece of armor is essential for the protection. These weapons you're going to see when we go through them, or these pieces of armor, are basically protective. They're to defend us. Now, we got the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. That's our offensive weapon. But most of these pieces of armor are protective. Many Christian casualties are a result of a believer who did not have on the whole armor of God. Twice God said to put on the whole armor of God. Every piece is necessary, for Satan knows where we are unprotected and will aim for that area. The armor of God is a very important thing. It's not an academic study. It's not just a Sunday school lesson. But it's very important for us to understand the helmet of salvation. Loins girt about with truth. Because if we don't put on those different qualities and characteristics in this life, we'll be unusable to God. We'll be a casualty in the battle. So let's look at these verses, beginning in verse number 10 down to verse number 13. And look at what the Bible has to say about the armor of God. Verse 14 starts the pieces, and we'll begin with that next week. But tonight, let's look at, first of all, number 1, the call. The call in verse 10 is the call to be strong. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. It's a call to be strong. God is not satisfied with weak Christians. He doesn't want us to be weaklings spiritually. God did not save anybody and say, now I want you to be young and immature and weak and dependent on others and never grow up. God doesn't intend that for anybody. He wants us to grow to be strong. We start with the sincere milk of the Word. Then we graduate to the meat of the Word. We're supposed to be growing and getting stronger. The problem in our day is that the vast multitude of those that claim the name of Christ are weaklings when it comes to spiritual things. Now, I know that might sound very harsh and very judgmental, but it is a reality. They are not up for the battle. They're not up for the fight. They're not equipped for it. And so they stay in the league that they belong in, which is the little league. They're not ready for the profession. They're not ready for those that are quicker and faster. And the world is quicker and faster. And for us to fight that battle, we're going to have to answer that call to be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. Notice it says, be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. The Christian who tries to fight the battle himself is foolish. I got a text message, and some of you might remember Devon and Trisha Pinnell. They used to sit in the back section back here, and I think they got baptized here. I can't remember. They were coming to church here until they ended up moving up to Coshocton. And I've kept in touch with them since they moved up there. I encouraged them to find a good church, and they got in Brother Johnson's church up in Coshocton, Victory Baptist, and that's a blessing. But I've kept contact with them for a couple of reasons. One, because, this might shock you, I care about them. I care about everybody that comes to Bible Baptist Church. Even once they leave, I still care about them. Especially if they leave on good terms and they leave friendly. And again, with Devon, he wanted us to know where's a good church I can go to. And second of all, because they might move back to Cambridge someday. You never know. And it's good to keep that contact with them. So if they ever do come back here, which is home, they'll be back in church. But he texted me yesterday, and I don't have my phone with me, but he's been diagnosed with some kind of a skin cancer. And the medical term was on there, and it's just got him scared. I mean, he's probably not 30 years old yet, or around that age, and he's got a skin cancer, and he said, Pastor, I'm scared. And I tried to encourage him in the Lord. I tried to remind him, and he knows it, that he has no control over that. There's nothing he can do about it. But now is a good time to put your trust in the Lord, and He will take away that fear, casting all your care upon Him, for He careth for you. Putting all that care upon Him, not only for your own peace of mind, but also for those as a testimony to others that your faith is real and your trust is real. But we can only do that if we're strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. I wouldn't want to have to go through that or so many other things without the Lord. And so we need to realize that our call is to be strong in Him. Too many times we forget, you notice on our page, that the battle is the Lord's, 1 Samuel 17:47. The battle is the Lord's. If we try to fight the battle on our own, I'll tell you what will happen if you try to fight the spiritual battle in this life in your own power. I can guarantee what's going to happen. You're going to get blown out of the water. You're going to lose because you don't have the strength. I don't have the strength. I don't have the ability to do it. I used to have a sign years and years ago, back in the 80s. We were overseas on the mission field. And I forget what it was, but it was somebody holding it, maybe it was Garfield or something, holding the globe on his back. And it said, it's you and me against the world. And at the bottom it said, personally, I think we're going to get creamed. And I thought, that's the exact truth. If we try to take on this world by ourselves and our own strength, we're not going to make it. We've got to realize the battle is the Lord's. And although we are in the battle, we need to remember who our captain is. Hebrews chapter 2, verse 10, you might look it up later, refers to Jesus as the captain of our salvation. The captain of our salvation. We've got a good leader to follow. We've got someone who the Bible says in all points was tempted like as we are, yet without sin. And He knows what we're going through, and He's our commander-in-chief, and He's our captain, He's our leader. We can follow Him with every confidence that He'll get us through whatever's going on. He said in John 15, verse 5, without Me, ye can do nothing. If we try to get through on our own, we underestimate our foe. If we think we can take on the devil by ourselves, we have no idea the power of our enemy. I like the old hymn that says, the arm of flesh will fail you. Ye dare not trust your own. We need the Lord to help us. We sang a song Sunday night here in church, Sonia and Aaron and I, Lord, I can't even walk without You holding my hand. I sang that song to Sonia back in November. I'll give you a minute to catch up with me. But it's true. Lord, I can't even walk without You holding my... We have no strength of our own. So we need to trust in the call, be strong in the Lord. Number two, verse 11 is the counsel. C-O-U-N-S-E-L, the counsel. Meaning the counsel he gives. C-O-U-N-C-I-L is a counsel like a committee. But C-O-U-N-S-E-L is like counseling, getting counsel. And our counsel is, verse 11, put on the whole armor of God. That's the counsel that the Apostle Paul gives us, all right? That letter A, that's the what. The what about the counsel. What is the counsel? Put on the whole armor of God. The God who called you, all right, be strong in the Lord, is the God who clothes you. All right, the God who called you is the God who clothes. That's a tricky word to pronounce. Clothes you. When a fellow goes in, or a lady, I guess, goes in, a female goes into the military as a recruit, they take away all your worldly possessions, every stitch of clothes, everything you have. They, for the Marines, they even take away every stitch of hair. They take away everything, and they issue you new stuff. And they give you everything you need. And when I was in the Marines, the thing they drilled through you is if there was anything you thought you need that you didn't have, you didn't need it, because if you needed it, the Marine Corps would have given it to you. A lot of guys, after I've been in a while, would say, well, I've got a wife, and they said, you don't need a wife. If you needed a wife, the Marine Corps would have issued you one. And they were fairly serious when they said things like that. But the military gives us all the clothing we need, and thankfully they give us every piece of armor, every piece of clothing that you need to fight that battle. God does the same thing. God is no less capable of giving us every piece of clothing that we need to fight the spiritual battle. He wouldn't be much of a God if He left us out there in a battle unprotected. So He gives us the right footwear, our feet shod, with the preparation of the gospel. He goes from the feet to the helmet of sin. He covers us from head to toe with everything we need in that battle. How foolish would it be for a soldier to go out into the battle without his helmet? He said, well, I've got my body armor on. I've got my boots. I've got my flak. I've got everything. I'm okay. Well, dummy, you need your helmet. Whether he forgot it or he was just too cocky and didn't think he needed it, when he gets out in that battle, he's in trouble. God has given us, it says, put on the whole armor. Put on every piece. Don't say, well, I'll take this, this, and this, but I don't need that or that. Put on the whole armor of God. The why, letter B, the why in that counsel. Why should we put on the whole armor of God? That ye may be able to stand. Put it on that ye may be able to stand. We can't stand without it. Many Christians have been shot apart. Many Christians have been blown away. Because without these things, the faith and the preparation of the gospel and all these different, the shield of faith, all these things, without those things, they cannot face the devil. They cannot stand. We're going to take a stand tomorrow for what's right by going into this hearing. And as you know, and as we've talked about tonight, the majority of this town, the rest of this town, is not going to stand. We don't want to get involved. We don't want our name associated with that. It might be that a lot of these churches don't have a problem with alcohol in the first place. And so they're not going to take a stand. The devil's already blown them away. So the why, that you may be able to stand, all right? And then the who. What are we to do? Put on the whole armor of God. Why? That we might be able to stand. Who? Against the wiles of the devil. That's who the battle is against. We're going to see it's not against flesh and blood. It's against the wiles of the devil. I like that old word, wiles. It means tricks, not our treats. Tricks or snares. Tricks or snares. The devil has been at this for 4,000 years. He was able to take Adam and Eve in the garden and trick them into taking the fruit from the tree. If he could find a way, and I don't know how long it took him to come up with the plan, but if he could find a way to deceive and beguile our original parents, Adam and Eve, who were created in the likeness of God without sin, if he was able to trick them, I got news for you, Sonny. You're not going to be able to stand against him. He's too smart. He's too wise. Wise as serpents. He's wise. And so we need to have the armor of God so that we can stand against the wiles of the devil. 2 Timothy 2:16, you might want to just make note of it there. 2 Timothy 2:16 says, talks about the snare of the devil and those that are taken captive at his, the devil's, will. He watches you. He knows your weakness. He probably knows your weakness better than you know your weakness. Unless you're one of those Christians that confesses your sin regularly and searches your heart, the devil knows you better than you know yourself. And he knows where to hit you. He knows where to aim. So we need to be protected against the wiles of the devil. Number three, we have the call, number one, the counsel, number two, in verse 11. In verse number 12, we see the conflict. Verse number 12, the conflict. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood. Now, does anything strike you odd right there? We're talking about a soldier fighting a battle. And it says, we wrestle not. Wrestling is an individual effort. And you know what the Bible's telling us? That as a soldier, we're not shooting cannons at somebody far away. We're not even shooting rounds at somebody 300 yards away. We are involved in arm-to-arm combat. We are wrestling. That's close proximity. Our enemy isn't far away. Our enemy's right in front of us. And we wrestle. So the Bible uses that word. It didn't say we battle not. It says we wrestle, indicating that it's close combat. It's not shooting at a distance or firing a weapon far away. We are in a close combat. It says we wrestle. We need to be wrestling. Now, please, not here in the church, not literally. But we need to be wrestling. Letter A, who we are not supposed to wrestle. Who we are not supposed to wrestle. Verse 12 says, we wrestle not against flesh and blood. We talked about this already. The white supremacists meet the Antifa crowd, or however that's pronounced, and they go at each other, flesh and blood. I wasn't there that day. None of my children were there that day. They were all at their jobs, working. And I think that's a commendable thing, that people that are productive in their life don't have time for things like that. They can't take 2 days off a week to work, 2 days off of work to drive to Charlottesville to be involved in something like that. The best thing you can do when those things happen is stay as far away as you possibly can. That's the world wrestling with flesh and blood. We don't wrestle against flesh and blood. Now tomorrow we are going to go into a hearing to oppose the selling of alcohol across, but we're not going to wrestle. We're not going to throw accusations. We're not going to threaten. We're not going to fisticuffs. We're not going to do any of that. We're going to, with all reasonable, say, you're wrong for doing this, and here's why. Because they're not the enemy, it's the power behind them. The power that wants 9 places of alcohol sales in a village of 2,400 people. I don't know about you, but that figure just blows my mind away. That in this small a town, with an average income, I looked all this up, an average income of $34,000, and 9 places peddling alcohol, I might say in the other one, and peddling lottery tickets, but that's a whole different story. Just soaking the money out of the people that live in this place. We don't wrestle against those people. We wrestle against those principalities, those things. So who we are not supposed to wrestle, flesh and blood. You know what the problem is? Too many times the churches wrestle within themselves. This group against that group. This person against that person. I don't like them. I don't like their. He doesn't like him. He doesn't like... Whatever all that is. Paul said something about that in Galatians chapter 5, verse 15. He said to the church at Galatia, ye bite and devour one another. We don't wrestle with one another. And we certainly better not be wrestling with God. I remember when I was younger, one of the conversations between us, you know, would you get in the ring with Cassius Clay? How many of you know who Cassius Clay is? See, you're showing your age. Would you get in, that's back in that day, would you get in the ring with Cassius Clay? And, oh, for $1 million, sure, I'd get in. I'd run in circles for a while so he couldn't catch me. You know, we'd come up with all these different things. You wouldn't want to get in the ring with God and fight against Him. Because I don't care what your plan, your pre-plan might be. Well, I'll duck his jabs. I'll avoid his uppercuts. No, I'll outrun him for a few seconds in the ring. No, you won't. Jacob thought he'd do that. Remember the story in Genesis? I'm not going to let you go. He wrestled with an angel of God, the angel of God. He wrestled with him. The angel said, let me go. He said, I'm not going to let you go. He said, Jacob, you're going to let me go whether you want to or not. Now, this is in the Leafly version. It's not all there in Genesis. Jacob, you're going to let me go whether you want to or not. No, I'll not let you go unless you bless me. Now, that angel could have melted Jacob right there in front of him. He could have just obliterated the poor guy and he would have never known what hit him. But instead, he reached out and touched the hollow of his thigh, Brother Jay. And for the rest of the year, Jacob walked with a limp. You weren't wrestling with God, were you? Okay, good. Neither was I. All he did was touch the hollow of his thigh, and for the rest of Jacob's life, he never forgot the foolish mistake he made of trying to wrestle with God. Don't wrestle with God. There's some folks we ought not wrestle with. And then letter B, who we are supposed to wrestle. Who we are supposed to wrestle. And the Bible gives us a list of our four foes to fight. And I like that expression. The four foes to fight. Principalities, powers, rulers of the darkness of this world, and spiritual wickedness in high places. Now sometimes those things appear earthly. Principalities, you know what those are? Those are governments. Ahasuerus ruled over 172 provinces back in the book of Esther. Provinces are earthly governments, and sometimes we wrestle against them. It's not them, it's the power behind them sometimes. Powers, rulers of the darkness of this world, spiritual wickedness in high places. You can make an argument that some of those things are physical, as far as worldly as we see them, but they're really spiritual enemies. That's where the conflict is, with the power behind what we see as earthly. Number four, before the kids come tearing up here. Number four, verse 13, the command. Wherefore take unto you the whole armor of God. This is a second admonition. He said in verse number 11, put on the whole armor of God. Now he says again, wherefore, and wherefore is there because of verse 12, because of those four enemies. Wherefore, because of those enemies, take unto you the whole armor of God. Letter A, the repetition. The repetition. He has repeated that call or that command. Take unto you the whole armor of God. Repetition, we say, is the key to learning. And so the Bible repeats it a second time. The carpenter knows that not one hit of the nail with the hammer sinks the nail completely. It's got to be hit a second time. And Paul knew that for these believers in Ephesus, they needed to be reminded of what they were just told. They needed to be told again, don't forget it. Take unto you the whole armor of God. Sometimes we might say, well, preacher, why are you preaching that sermon? You preached that once before. Well, bless God. Maybe you needed it a second time. And the Spirit of God just laid it on my heart to give it to you, and I didn't even know it was for you. Sometimes we need to hear the same thing more. I never get tired of hearing the old story of salvation. I never get tired of hearing the Lord's coming back again. And when we get to the point where we think repetition's a bad thing in the things of God, we're in trouble. We need to be reminded. Take into you the whole armor of God. In Philippians chapter 3, verse 1, Paul said, "To write the same thing to you, to me it is not grievous, but for you it is safe." When you're raising your kids, did you just tell them one time, don't do this or don't do that? Or did you tell them multiple times? Well, God tells you multiple times because you're one of His kids. And you're just like your kids are. You need to hear it more than once. And so the Bible says, it repeats the command, take unto you the whole armor of God. Letter B, the reason. The reason the command is repeated. That ye may be able to withstand. Withstand. What does withstand mean? It means to put equal force against that which is opposing you and be able to stand against it. To not get blown over. To not get run over. We need the whole armor of God so we can fight the devil so he doesn't bulldoze us and run over our lives. So many Christians are obliterated in the battle. That you may be able to withstand. We can get tired in this battle. The afflictions of this life in 60, 70, 80, 90 years, the afflictions, the battles that we fight. We think of Karen Westover going through her second round with a different kind of cancer at a young age. Brother Matthews was telling me before church that they're going to a funeral for Jane's nephew on Friday, who died recently, and he's in his 50s. Some people are fighting battles of affliction. Not all of us fight the same battles, but we need the armor for every kind of battle that can come our way. There's the battles of persecution. Maybe from family, from friends that don't appreciate our love for the Lord, don't appreciate our dedication to Him. We need to stand against temptations. There are diverse, the Bible calls them, diverse. You know what that means? Many kinds of temptations. And what tempts you doesn't tempt her or tempt him, but what tempts them doesn't tempt you. We've all got our own temptations, and we need the armor of God to stand against it. And so, I'll protect this part or that part or the other part. You leave one empty, the devil's just licking his chops waiting for you to leave that one area empty. Then letter C, lastly, the result. Take unto you the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand. And having done all, to stand. To stand. To stand. Preacher, how long do I need to stand? You need to stand. Well, I've stood for so many years. Can I quit now? No. There's no quitting. You know why? Because the devil never quits. When he retires, you can retire from the battle. When he quits, you can quit. But you know what the Bible tells me? That the accuser of the brethren doesn't rest day or night. We need to put on the whole armor of God that we might be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Next Wednesday we're going to begin in verse number 14 with having our loins girt about with truth. But when we take the admonition, begin to search ourselves tonight and say, Lord, I need to have the armor of God because I want to be victorious. I hear preachers all the time, TV evangelists, talking about living a life of victory, and they never mention the armor of God. They always mention financial planning and things like that, but never the armor of God. This is what protects us. Let's stand together tonight with our heads bowed and our eyes closed.